So you meet a woman online.
I love her. I just love her.
But it turns out, thousands of other people are in love with her too.
Janessa Brazil.
Janessa Brazil.
Janessa Brazil.
One woman's image is being used by criminals to target innocent people looking for love online.
You win their hearts, you win their wallets.
Love, Janessa. My wild quest to find her. The unwitting human face of a digital con. From CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service.
This is a CBC podcast.
Basically 1 month countdown to like wedding and 35th birthday. So I'm kind of like on a bit of a, like an exercise kick.
It's like a big freaking deal.
Yeah.
This is Other People's Problems, a show about therapy. I'm Hillary McBride. This episode, we hear from Sloan. We've changed her name to protect her privacy. When you're listening to this session, what I want you to hear is all of the pain that's underneath the story that she's telling me, that there is so much wounding that she's carried with her throughout her adult life. The abuse that she went through has catastrophically transformed the way she exists in the world, the way she perceives of herself and other people. And I want you to hear that in rare circumstances like this, putting a name and a label on things actually can be educative, that it can be empowering, that it can be healing for someone to understand that the pain that they carry and the things that are confusing to them in their present day life are not a function of them being a bad, awful, crazy person, but they're bruises.
So yes, I'm feeling really excited. I'm feeling anxious. Okay. I'm feeling all of the feelings that I think any normal person would be feeling leading up to their wedding.
Yeah,
I'm feeling a little bit angry because so he has been really, if I try to like talk about our wedding, he gets really upset about it, especially if it's at work. Mm. But me, I'm like, oh, like I'm able to like work. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to like check on Pinterest and see if I see any interesting like DIY inspo for wedding. Cause I know I have like these things that I need to like accomplish and these weekends that I have to do it. So now he's made it a rule that we can only talk about it on the weekends, which I'm like, he's testing me because,
can I ask a question about that? Did he give you a choice about?
No.
Okay.
No, he was just like, he had like a little bit of a meltdown about a week ago about our wedding. He basically had like a slight meltdown about like the budget and the number of guests. And we had a big fight and he said like a lot of mean things to me. He basically was getting really, really, really upset about the fact that our wedding went from 70 people to now 100. It's like a little over 100. He wanted to spend around $20,000 to $25,000 on our wedding. And like, so we've gone over about $10,000. Mm-hmm. And his family is going to think he's stupid. Like if they knew how much money we were making, they would be really upset at him for spending this much money on a wedding. And I'm like, I have friends that spend like $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 on a wedding. And then he started to basically be like, I should have put my foot down. I should have been mad about it. I shouldn't have been a pussy. All these things that are like out of like character for him. I was really upset. I said some mean things to him. I don't even remember exactly what I said to him. But so this is where we argue the most, is because he wants me to take a lot of risks, both financially and lifestyle-wise, and has asked me to join him on this journey when it comes to our business. You know, and now we're applying for a loan. It's like pretty outside of my comfort zone in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I've been really like on board for all of these things. So I was starting to like get really upset and I was like trying to explain it to him that like by him making like a really big deal about like 30K, when we look at like where we want our life to be or like where we want to see ourselves and like on my deathbed, I know it's something that I'm not going to want to think about. It's not something that's going to like make or break my life. So it's like in the moment, I'm like, okay with like making this kind of a special day. And he started saying all these things that were like segregating versus uniting. And I was like, where is all this coming from? Like, not very helpful that you're like saying this to me 1 month before.
basically, I was like, this is going to be the only time in our life where our entire family is going to be together. And I'm like, it's kind of hurtful to, that you can't see that. And then I had to, like, explain to him and remind him that, like, if he's not able to see that and if he's not able to understand, like, even, like, financially, that, like, I'm taking a risk in this area that's mm-hmm. really important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking him to take a risk on us.
Yeah.
Love is forever, but it's a risk.
Slow down for a second.
Yeah.
There's lots of emotion.
Yeah.
Tell me what you're feeling while you're talking about this.
Well, I am, like, okay.
What do you feel?
I'm not, like... He basically called me a princess and, like, told me that I wanted a fairy tale wedding and, like, all these things that are not entirely true at all.
And what did that feel like?
And, well, it basically made me feel like I wanted to be alone. Because...
What was it about that? Yeah. Tell me the because.
I don't know, because I feel like relationships shouldn't be that hard. Like, I basically, it made me feel like shit, and I told him why. I told him that he was making me feel like... my mom. Mm-hmm. I was able to link a feeling. I told him that growing up, my mom would do the same where we would be really excited about something. And then like a month before
yeah.
or like leading to the day, it would be this turmoil. And I'm like, that's not cool. Like you can't say like none of what I've shared with you is a surprise. Like I have proof because I've emailed you. I have text messages. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like I was just like in passing saying, oh, by the way, like catering is $5,000. Like, no, I'm smarter than that. I emailed you. I printed a copy. We went through it together. You wanted to treat our wedding like a business project. And we did. And now all of a sudden, like a month before, you have this like built up
anxiety
about it. Mm. And
well, I imagine this would be really scary for you because like you mentioned before, it feels threatening to the security of the relationship to have him question the things that you two want together.
Yeah, exactly. And then also okay, so I'm going to just quickly go off on a tangent just because I think it'll give you some context in terms of why emotionally I'm feeling stressed out and also maybe why he might be feeling a little bit like tense
as well. Thanks for explaining that for me. Sure.
One thing that's really helpful to know when working with people who have PTSD or complex PTSD is that PTSD brainwave patterns match those of people who have ADHD. So what we see is this very fragmented attentional difficulty staying focused and on task, difficulty regulating attention and having problems with executive functioning. And so normally in our work together, she will go all over the place, and it will seem to me at times like I can't find the threads between what she's talking about. So for her in this moment to be able to articulate that she knows that we're going to pause the main conversation and she's opening up a tangential conversation, for her to have that awareness tells me that she's getting much more self-awareness, much more executive control, and that there are some neurological shifts, some signs of healing taking place.
I've been working on building a relationship with my dad. It's been taking a lot of time, and it's like a lot of work on my end, and I've accepted that just because it's just the way that it is. My dad was asking me about our business and how things were. And so I was like, yeah, like things are good. You know, we're growing. Mm-hmm. We are working on new products. We're actually, you know, just waiting for our paperwork to be finalized from our accountant so we can apply for a loan. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, what kind of loan are you looking for? Or just started asking me all these questions mm-hmm. about money, which typically is like really uncomfortable for me, right?
Usually off.
It is like really uncomfortable mm-hmm. for me. So I was like, oh, you know, we're going to be asking for somewhere around 150 to 200. And he started asking me like what our sales were and what our growth has been, you know, maybe because I have no expectations of my dad and maybe I also don't really care. I'm going to tie this back to your manipulation question.
Okay.
Trust me. I know I go on tangents, but I have tied this story into a loop.
I just want to pause you for a second.
Okay.
That is the first time you've ever said something like that in session, where you've noticed that there's been a question and we've taken a detour, but then you've acknowledged the question, even though you're not there and we're going to come back. That's actually really exciting for me to hear.
Okay, good.
Sometimes when we work together, it seems like all of the things in your life are really disconnected and fragmented from each other. And having difficulty weaving a coherent narrative is a thing that happens for people who have been through trauma growing up, who've been through abuse. It's like all of the stories and all of the parts get disconnected. And the fact that you could name that there is a question and acknowledge it and want to come back to it tells me that we're actually getting somewhere in terms of helping all of the parts of your brain stay connected. So when you tell me that, I'm thrilled.
Okay.
So I just wanted to pause you and tell you and celebrate with you that that is a marker that I see as being really significant.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yay.
Awesome. But so I like, so we go there and we start to like go over paperwork, and my dad, he was like not positive about it whatsoever.
Oh,
like
okay.
It was really disappointing, actually.
Yeah.
My dad basically was like not impressed at all whatsoever with our business. Like, at all. Like, he basically told us to find jobs. Like, he was basically, he just said a lot of stuff that he probably shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
And I also, like, am really good at zoning people out, just as good as people are probably good at zoning me out. I'm good at zoning my dad out, I guess. Or I was just
what
kind of like,
out?
And I just was like, just sat there and I kind of like stared at him blankly, to be quite honest. And I'm wondering if it's like, so I'm wondering if it's because like I haven't had a father figure my entire life and he's now back in my life, but I don't really need my dad for, to be my dad. So I shared it with three people, and that's all I've shared it with.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared it with them just to kind of like, these are like three women in my life that are older than I am. And like, they're really good at just giving me
and
good
like
advice
on
and calling
too.
Me on stuff as well. And I was just kind of like, oh, you know, like, so I felt like I was making it sound like I wanted them to feel sorry for me.
So slow down for a second. When you remember having that conversation,
yeah.
Do you remember what you wanted to hear from them?
I don't.
So,
like, I was just, like, telling them. And I'm like, oh, afterwards, I'm like, was I just, like, being manipulative? Or was I being, not manipulative, was I asking for, or what was, like, I was trying to, like, understand when I was sitting here, example of, is that a time where I should just be writing these things down? Another thing that he's brought up with me in the last month that's kind of like bothered him about me is that my desire to want to, like, I always want to talk about things, or I always want to get other people's opinion. And I do that sometimes with our relationship, and I don't necessarily can't get through to him. I'll talk about with a friend, because that's what girlfriends talk about. Like, we talk about our shit with our husbands or whatnot. And sometimes I'll give you an example.
Okay. You're giving me lots of things that I want to respond to, so let's just pick a few of them. Can I tell you why I think you were talking to them?
Yeah.
Because when things are hard, we share them with people in our lives. Because I think life is more meaningful when we feel like we're not alone. And you've already told me that they are people that you trust to help you see things with perspective. That's a big deal to open your finances to somebody, and that's something that's previously been really hard for you, and it seems like it was significant. And I think that because we're humans who exist in relationship with other humans, that something becomes real or validated when we share it with somebody else. And I think it helps us feel like we're not alone.
Yeah, so I guess like my issue and my anger and my frustration has been, it's hard for me to get him to open up about things. And now he's giving me all these boundaries on like when we can communicate about certain things.
I have some concerns about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think just because there wasn't a dialogue, it feels controlling in a way that doesn't actually allow you to have a say in things. And so I don't think talking about wedding just on the weekend is a bad thing, but I think if someone frames it like, hey, I'm really stressed about this, it would really help me if we could put some boundaries on when we talk about it, that would make me feel less anxious throughout the week. And if he was acknowledging that this was about him feeling overwhelmed and he needs to control.
But he did say that.
Okay, good. I think it's important when boundaries happen to have some
he
conversation
said that,
about it.
But then he said that with all the other things that were like annoying that he just, my annoyance with him, sorry to interrupt you, is that my partner thinks that I'm too whiny. I feel like I'm working towards understanding that life is going to be ups and downs, and like sharing with him when I truly feel like like, really sit down with myself and I'm like, okay, like, how did this, like, truly make me feel?
It sounds like you're a verbal processor and, like, he processes internally.
Totally. So and we're, so like...
he perceives you talking all the time as actually being, like, you whining or complaining or being really anxious, but it's you working through stuff. And so it could be just about the two of you having some sort of understanding or agreement about how you are both similar and different. That everybody processes stuff, but some people do it on the inside, and when they have a final product, they emit it, and other people, it just kind of comes out. Because I think if we go back to your original question about anxiety, you have learned, your nervous system has learned to be on guard all the time. And you and I have talked about how you feel afraid about everything and scared about everything because things would come out of nowhere that you weren't anticipating and you get hurt. Things would be said, you would be physically hurt. Things would be taken away from you. And so your system learned just always be on guard. Always be anticipating a threat. Always be hypervigilant. Always see the problem where there could be one. Because that's literally what your nervous system needed to do to survive. Mm-hmm. So I want you to see that your anxiety and even the way that you share things and understand things and process things and calm yourself, all of that comes out of what you learned to do up until this point to keep yourself safe. And the process that you and I are doing is deeper than just, oh, let's come up with some strategies for managing, you know, work stress. It's literally us trying to change how your nervous system stores threats and trauma and danger and safety so that you don't have to be so anxious about things that you've learned to be anxious about. But there are times when you viscerally are going to get really agitated because whatever's going on around you, mm-hmm. is reminding some part of your brain and nervous system of a really bad thing that happened a long time ago, and it can't tell the difference of if it's happening again or not. So my guess is that it would actually be super helpful for him to learn a little bit about how trauma affects the brain so that he could understand you, but also maybe even understand himself. You meet most of the diagnostic criteria for what we call complex PTSD.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means.
I want for you to do a little bit of reading about it. We can talk about it more.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb. And through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
I find that sometimes putting labels on things creates a sense of stigma, makes people feel like they're a condition, that they are a problem. And other times it can actually be extremely liberating for a person. It can help them feel like they aren't broken, that actually there is a way of making sense of the way that their body responds, especially if it feels chaotic inside or confusing to them, that being able to classify it, put a name on it, read about it, connect with other people who have been through something similar, really helps destigmatize their experiences of suffering. And so having had this hypothesis for months, maybe even since our first appointment together, there was this mounting sense of pressure that the anxiety that she was feeling didn't make sense to her. And I wanted to be able to say, there is a reason why things are hard for you in relationship. Putting a name on this is meant to educate her towards more empowerment, towards more maybe even self-compassion, and then help to demystify why some things are hard when they're not hard for other people. Because of what you went through, your brain-body system is just on overdrive all the time. And the reason why I'm telling you that is because the reactions that you have, although I think you can do something about them, they're way bigger than just deciding to not be dramatic. This is more than that. And I would love to support to help him understand how your brain works differently than other people's because of what you've been through, so that he knows what to hold you accountable for and what not to hold you accountable for. But my guess is that is own anxiety. And sometimes totally. It gets confusing about what's her making a big deal about it. What's my anxiety? What's actually me making a big deal of something? When you put two people in the mix who are stressed and feeling overwhelmed and scared, things can feel pretty crazy and it's hard to pick out what's what.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything negative about it that I need to know about? Like, is it like a legit thing? Complex PTSD?
Yeah. So it's, what do you mean it's a legit thing?
Not legit. Like, is there like,
it's real?
It's real. You're saying it's real, but like, yeah. What does it mean? Like, what are the personality?
You basically fit it to a T. It just means that, so we have different ways of classifying trauma. So there's a single incident trauma. You could say like someone's had a great life and then they get hit by a car. Mm-hmm. And it's really bad and it screws up their body and they're in chronic pain and they have to learn how to walk. And it's really hard for them to be out on the road again. But then there's a different kind of trauma, type 2 trauma or complex trauma, which is it's not just one incident. And it was really young when your brain was developing, and it happened consistently over time by people who were in a position of care. And so it changes your ability to trust people because the people you're supposed to trust would hurt you or take things away from you or make you feel bad. It changes your assessment of what's safe. It's hard to tell what's safe because you got used to danger. Generally, it involves some sort of inability to manage intense emotions. Like things just come up and they're really overwhelming. And because nobody ever taught you, no one was ever safe for you in a way to say, I know you're sad. That was really hard. Come sit on my lap. I love you. We're going to get through this together. Let's take some deep breaths. And so you get thrown into life with this, think of like a compass that's all wacky. And you have done a fantastic job of being an incredibly resilient, hardworking, high achieving woman. But there are things that happened a long time ago that are keeping you stuck from having the healthiest life possible now, like being afraid your mom's going to kill you. Mm-hmm. Like that's not a normal thing to be afraid of. That's a thing that happens when people have been through trauma growing up. Mm-hmm. The point is, it's real, and I'm telling you because I want you to know that you're not just a baby, you're not just overreacting, that what you have been through has shaped who you are. And that it has an effect on you that's long-lasting.
Okay.
How is, like, I'm giving you a lot of information. I'm just telling you, like, this is what I'm seeing. I've been seeing this for a long, actually from the first time we met. I thought that you met some diagnostic criteria. I don't think it is necessarily always helpful to talk about it like that. But when your partner starts getting involved and going, why are you doing this? And stop doing this. Then sometimes it can be helpful to say, hey, it's actually harder for her to stop doing this than it is for other people because there's more going on here.
Yeah.
But what is it like for you to have me say all of these things?
I kind of had an idea, not about like PTSD or about what form of PTSD. I just always thought that I was, like, depressed.
Yeah.
And I'm a nerd, so all I want to do is go home and read up about it. But other than that, I mean, I don't feel like it's going to really change my life in terms of what I'm already doing.
Could it be supportive for you to feel like you know this?
I think maybe it will help me maybe be a bit more gentle towards myself, and I will. He probably has PTSD. Like, he grew up in the Civil War and was on the last flight out of the country. His dad was tortured and kidnapped. So, like,
oh my God.
So I'm sure he has some anxiety and some PTSD. He just won't see a therapist for some odd reason. So that's going to be his job to do that, not mine.
I'm just thinking about how putting a label on something doesn't change any of the things that we've already done. And it's important for me to tell you about the little things that I see. Like today, there's some coherence happening. You're telling me out loud, hey, this is the story I'm going on and we'll come back to this. Like that is, again, a massive sign for me that we're making some good progress. I think of one of our first sessions when I said to you, I'm not going to drop you. I remember you saying, like, nobody's said that, or like, that's a big deal. Like, that was the beginning of us starting to form an attachment relationship where we could say, those patterns of relationship that you had before, this is different. And so you can trust me and you can be safe. And when you're safe with me, we can start going to the hard places and rewriting some of those stories. Mm-hmm. But I think of the work that you do here as being incredibly inspiring for me, because I know how hard life has been for you. And so the fact that you come and you tell me the truth about your life and you let me into the scariest, most difficult experiences, that says to me that you are a fierce warrior woman.
Thank you.
See some tears. Can you tell me what's going on?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. What's that like to hear me say that?
It was nice for you to say that.
Does it go in?
Yep.
In this part, I hear her tenderness and what I might refer to as a therapist as being like a young child part, like a young part of her that's scared, that doesn't want to be left, that is desperate to know that she's seen and valued and cared for. And so there's this beautiful vulnerability that comes out. Normally when you listen to audio as Sloan, you can hear that she is going a mile a minute. And here she slows down enough to hear me say something, to feel, to take it in, perhaps to consider that maybe what I'm saying might be true. And I just think it's so beautiful that she slows down enough to hear those things and has started to trust me enough that real healing can start to take place.
I really mean it. And if you ever feel like you think I've forgotten it or you've forgotten it, I will tell you that every time you ask.
Okay.
Until you don't need to hear it anymore. Whew, big stuff today.
Big stuff today. Okay, so
you've got some reading to do.
I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems was created and produced by Jody Martinson. Co-produced and original music by Lee Rosevier. Arif Narani is the executive producer of CBC Original Podcasts. If you like what you're hearing, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can find more episodes, plus exclusive digital extras at cbc.ca/OPP. Next time, on Other People's Problems, we hear from Patty.
Even when I set him like up for success with all of these like check-ins that I think are helpful and he finds annoying and frustrating, you know, like I almost feel like, almost like I want to like be a bitch.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.